Victoria, though it seems I may find my talents better suited to opening a distillery instead.
Do you really think that this will be a problem? Constantine asked, a confused expression still on his face after we had formally introduced ourselves to the alchemist. I mean, sure, I could appreciate a stiff drink after a day like today, but I don't get why this is such a big deal.
You really need to start paying more attention to trade skills, Constantine,
Caius scolded gently.
Aside from the fact that people would want to drink it, alcohol in general is a key ingredient for all higher quality recipes for both cooking and alchemy.
Leather crafting, too, I added, remembering one of the newer recipes that I'd learned. I need strong alcohols to tan thicker types of hide, and that's only what I've discovered so far.
Almost all potions have an alcohol base, too,
Marlin added, having visibly relaxed now that he understood Thorne's motivations for getting him clear of the other adventurers. Shit, I didn't realize that. Constantine accepted the rebuke with a nod, pausing for a moment to think. The demand is going to be incredible. Are you looking for investors?
Investors? Me?
Marlin stammered, completely caught by surprise by the offer.
I just got here, and,
Oh, that's a good idea,
Sierra agreed enthusiastically.
I'm happy to offer up my time to help, Caius said to Marlin. I have some experience as an alchemist already.
Me too,
Zethus spoke up from the alchemist's side.
I would love to be a part of this.
Count me in as well,
Thorne added with a wave of his hand. Marlin gaped at all of us as we stared at him, waiting for a reply, his mouth working soundlessly while trying to find any words at all.
I didn't expect to have such enthusiasm for my arrival, but I would certainly be interested in... We would have to discuss terms. Perhaps this conversation would be better suited to a more relaxed environment at a later time, yes?
Leandra came to the alchemist's rescue, seeing that the older man was clearly overwhelmed with everyone standing around him.
I must get to work if we are to see the shelter constructed by nightfall. In the meantime, we can store the alchemy equipment within the crafting hall and keep it out of sight. That would be wonderful!
Marlin nodded eagerly, seizing the lifeline Leandra had cast.
There's just so much to absorb at the moment and after the attack this morning, Mimi.
We completely understand, Marlin, I told the alchemist. There is quite a lot to consider. Just keep us in mind, and we can talk more about it later.
Thank you, yes, of course.
The man continued to nod as Thorne gathered the reins, ready to move the cart closer to the crafting hall.
Okay, Lear,
Constantine said to me as the cart slowly began to move away. We really need to get our ship moving for the meeting. Yeah, you're right, I sighed in acknowledgement, turning to look at Leandra while opening a menu in my vision. I'm queuing a bunch of bronze and leather refinement in my offline task list, but I'm also permitting you to assign crafting tasks to me while I'm gone. We're all going to be gone tonight for a full rest cycle to reset our timers.
Good. I was going to ask that you did so,
the architect replied, inclining his head as he accepted the prompt I had sent him.
Go to your meeting and do not waste time worrying. We should have everything well in hand until you return.
Awesome. Thanks, Leandra. I bid the catman farewell before I turned towards the rest of the group and gave them a quick wave. See y'all tonight. Send Constantine or me a message if anything comes up that you really need us for.
No worries, Lear, Sierra replied with a smile. We'll be fine. Just make sure you have good news waiting for us tonight.
Fingers crossed. I gave one final wave to the group as I called up a menu I'd only seen a handful of times in the last month.
Are you sure you want to log off?
Yes?
No.
I mentally selected yes, and felt my perception begin to change as the world slowly faded to black.
Loading. Please wait.
Chapter 4. Toronto, Ontario, Canada. CTI Player Housing Complex, 9th floor, apartment suite.
Ugh, stupid thing,
I cursed under my breath as I fought to properly adjust my now too large dress shirt.
If it wasn't enough that my in-game body's all different, so is my fucking real one.
Hey, Mark,
I heard Peter's voice call from the hallway a second before he poked his head into the bathroom.
You ready to go yet?
Yeah, one sec.
I glanced quickly at Peter, then back towards the mirror, my mind forcing me to do a double take as my friend's appearance registered in my head. Turning to look back, it took a moment for my mind to accept that I was looking at someone I had regularly seen nearly every day for the last month, his physical appearance not matching up to what I normally had pictured in my head. Standing at nearly 6 feet tall, with a wild mop of dark brown hair, I was expecting to see Peter's slightly pudgy face looking back at me. But instead, I saw a lean, unfamiliar face staring back at me. Glancing down, I saw that his shirt hung even looser than mine did, and that his pants were struggling to stay hanging around his hips, even with his belt cinched to the tightest notch.
"The virtual reality diet is damn defective, isn't it?"
Peter said softly, noticing my prolonged stare.
"Yeah, that it is," I replied slowly. "How much have you lost?"
"So far?"
Peter shrugged, something I could barely see through his loose shirt.
"About 20 pounds. You?"
"Almost 10. The virtual reality diet was a term that the media had coined to describe the rather considerable weight loss that all long-term play players underwent after playing Ascend Online for a prolonged period. Rather than being an intended outcome by CTI, the weight loss was actually a side effect of the constant anti-atrophy treatments that were performed on the comatose players to stave off muscular and cardiovascular degeneration, a nanite-based treatment program originally designed for coma patients, astronauts, and others confined to immobility for long periods of time. In order to prevent atrophy, the patient's cardiovascular system was intermittently stimulated to that of a moderate workout, while muscles were forced through tiny but constant contractions to ensure that they didn't deteriorate. This whole process also managed the patient's metabolism, preventing the body from consuming valuable muscle mass for energy, instead focusing on stored fat cells and the intravenous solutions fed to the body. The positive side effects for this process, aside from no muscular deterioration, was that prolonged treatment actually tended to improve the patient's overall physical conditioning and health. Though many players were finding it extremely jarring to get used to the changes that their body underwent when they logged themselves out of the game. It won't be long until you can tell that someone is a long-term player just by looking at them, I thought. Giving up on adjusting my shirt with a sigh, I moved to leave the bathroom, Peter leading the way as we grabbed our winter jackets and left the suite. A few minutes later, we had descended in the elevator and checked out of the secure section of the building. The lobby was nothing like launch day. The two of us only spotting a handful of people loitering in the hall, the eager expressions on their faces hinting that they had finally made it to the end of the incredibly long wait list and were set to join the world of Ascend Online. I wish them luck wherever they end up. I nodded at a middle-aged woman that made eye contact as Peter and I walked by and stepped outside, feeling the freezing winter wind slice straight through us.
"Couple of weeks till spring is here, and there's nothing but cold and snow in the forecast,"
Peter grumbled at the unnaturally cold winter, even by Canadian standards, as he signaled a passing taxi. A yellow sedan pulled itself out of the steady flow of traffic before us into an unused pickup lane set directly outside of the CTI building. Moving to get out of the freezing cold, Peter and I practically leaped into the small car, breathing in relief when we found the inside to be pleasantly warm.
"Hello. Thank you for choosing City Taxi."
The driverless car greeted us in a smooth male's voice the moment the doors closed.
"Where am I taking you today?"
I quickly rattled off the address to our stream producer's office, having taken the time to memorize it.
"Understood. Your estimated time of arrival is 7 minutes.
The car replied as it seamlessly rejoined traffic, the other cars automatically compensating to provide a gap.
"Would you like to engage quiet mode, or shall I turn the radio on?"
"Quiet mode," I told the car as I belted myself in.
It always amazes me that our parents were allowed to physically drive their cars through the downtown core here,
Peter commented wistfully, watching the hundreds of driverless vehicles seamlessly moving through the streets, often with less than a foot of clearance between one another. I can't imagine how much time they must have wasted in traffic or spent dealing with accidents.
No kidding, I agreed, shaking my head at the thought. With all the technological advances over the last 20 years, it was hard to believe that driverless vehicles had been relegated to an almost footnote status in history, overshadowed by the advent of nanotechnology. Commercially released in 2020, the technology supporting driverless vehicles rapidly expanded over the intervening decade as the auto industry competed savagely amongst one another in order to bring the technology fully to market. By the time the early 30s rolled around, practically every car on the road in a first world nation had some sort of automated driving technology. The natural progression after that was to create the automated traffic control system and fully remove the pesky and unreliable factor that was human input. This was then adopted by nearly every major metropolis when it was proved that the ATCS drastically cut down on traffic and fatal accidents. It was now a rarity to even hear of an accident in an ATCS-controlled area, as opposed to the almost daily fatalities and accidents in the years that preceded it.
"Nothing but ascend online advertisements everywhere you look," Peter commented, waving a hand towards a small truck beside us carrying a digital billboard currently displaying the game's logo on it.
Turning to look, the moment I made eye contact with the billboard, the display shifted, causing me to flinch as I found myself staring right into my own eyes, or at least those of my avatar's scarred and withered face.
Shit!
I winced at my own reaction. It was the first time I'd ever had a good look at myself from outside the game. I think I understand why people look at me the way they do now. Plastered right across the digital billboard was me in my ether-warped state, along with the rest of the party, including Amaranth, each of us poised in a heroic pose as we all gazed into the distance. A caption scrolled across the billboard. "The Birth of Virtue. Episode 1, starting tonight at 9 p.m. Game TV." Peter gasped, just as the billboard truck pulled away and turned down another street.
"What are the odds of that? We're on game TV?"
I couldn't help but smile in excitement, pushing away the embarrassment of being startled by my own appearance.
"Maybe that's what they wanted to talk to us about."
"Maybe,"
Peter nodded excitedly.
"We've been out of the loop for over a week, and, well, until today, we really haven't done anything really interesting. I don't think that we're going to get many more people watching us grind Wolverines until we hit level 13.
"Well, we have a hell of a lot more people in the town now. I'm sure something interesting will crop up," I replied, hoping that I hadn't just jinxed myself.
"Hopefully nothing as exciting as that whole bit with Graves," Peter commented wistfully.
"Hopefully," I echoed, completely agreeing with Peter's sentiment. "I'm hoping we can get the foundry up and functional soon. That iron we found back at the tower is proving damn hard to smelt."
"Man, I really need to play catch up with trade skills,"
Peter let out a deep sigh.
"There's just too much work to go around with all the construction we have on the go."
"I hear you there," I said sympathetically, remembering all the work we've done over the last few weeks.
"At least we found more hands to help out today."
"Yeah, all things considered, we were damn lucky."
The rest of the ride went smoothly, Peter and I chatting to pass the time as we wound our way through the city, until the taxi once again pulled itself out of traffic. Its voice spoke softly.
"We have arrived at your destination. Please ensure you have collected all your belongings before leaving the vehicle. Your account will be automatically charged $6. Thank you for choosing City Taxi and have a good day."
"You ready for this?"
I asked Peter, looking out into the cold and the big building looming before us.
"Of course,"
Peter grinned at me while he pulled his jacket tight.
"Let's go see how much money we've made."
Pushing through the frosted glass door, the first thing I noticed was that the entire office was in chaos. Construction workers were walking everywhere, along with the sound of countless power tools filling the air. Large areas of the office were sectioned into contained areas by thick walls of plastic to prevent dust from taking over the office. A single dark-haired secretary sat at a large wooden desk centering the room, perking up the moment she saw us walk in.
"Hi there! Welcome to Etherworld Productions. How can I help you today?"
"Etherworld Productions?" I asked, the company name not matching up to the one that I'd originally been expecting. "I'm not sure if we were in the right place."
You wouldn't happen to be Marcus and Peter by chance?
The woman asked.
That's us, Peter replied. I thought this was...
Oh, good, you're here. Sorry for the confusion.
The woman came around the desk, rushing to greet us with a large smile plastered across her face.
We've actually just changed our company name to help with branding, and it has been hectic getting everything changed over to the new name. My name is Jen, by the way.
Nice to meet you, Jen, I replied graciously, happy that we were in the right place.
Paul asked me to send you two back to him as soon as you got here, so please follow me.
Jen began leading us through the office, almost all of which seemed to be under some sort of renovation.
Sorry about all the construction. We've been long overdue for a facelift here and decided to get it all done in one shot.
No worries, Peter said. We understand.
Smoothly gliding around all the construction, Jen led us towards an already finished meeting room at the back of the office where two men were waiting for us. The moment we stepped into the room, both men leaped to their feet and came around the massive table to shake our hands.
Marcus, Peter, I'm happy you could both make it today.
Paul greeted us enthusiastically before motioning towards the other man in the room.
This is our attorney, Andrew. I've asked him to sit in on our meeting today. I think he'll have some interesting advice for you both after we get our update out of the way.
Pleasure to meet you both,
Andrew said softly as he shook our hands.
Can I interest you two in some coffee or tea?
Jen asked, indicating a pair of carafes on a nearby table.
Yes, coffee please,
I nodded excitedly, Peter echoing my response. Moving efficiently, the dark-haired secretary poured a pair of cups for both Peter and me, before excusing herself from the meeting room.
Let me know if you need anything else.
Thanks, Jen,
I called to the secretary's retreating form as the door closed, and I breathed the sweet and tantalizing aroma of the coffee before me. My first cup in well over a week.
So, we're really excited to hear what's happened over the last couple of weeks,
Peter began excitedly.
Just on our way here, we saw an ad for our stream on Game TV. I had no idea we were that popular.
Yes,
Paul exclaimed cheerfully as he sat back down at the table across from us.
Ascend Online has just been dominating the entertainment market. You wouldn't believe what the demand for quality and entertaining streams are like, which I'm happy to say that your guild ranks among the highest for.
That's great, I replied with a smile. I mean, we've been having a ton of fun playing the game, but I'm happy it's working out in the real world, too.
Of course,
Paul agreed wholeheartedly as he began pulling a handful of papers out of a folder on the table and handing them over to us.
I'm sure you're both eager to know just how much you've made with your stream so far, so here's a general breakdown.
Setting my coffee cup aside, I grabbed the sheet with nervous hands, scanning through the document. My eyes widened as I looked at the final figure, causing me to look back up at the two men with a stupefied expression on my face.
We've made a little over $400,000 in not even 3 weeks of airtime?
Well, you've actually made a great deal more than that,
Paul added.
Unfortunately, taxes and CTI's 5% cut take a rather substantial portion of your earnings.
You're not kidding,
Peter snorted as he pointed out the line where Etherworld's production fee, taxes, and CTI's portion of the revenue were calculated on my sheet of paper.
I'd completely forgotten that CTI had their hands in the revenue stream. But still, $400,000 is not that shabby.
That's incredible, I exclaimed, waving my hand in the air, narrowly missing knocking my coffee mug over.
I was worried that there would be far too much competition from literally every other player that wanted to stream their playtime.
That definitely has an impact on the market,
Paul acknowledged.
However, there are very few players that have combined multiple feeds into a single episodic show like you all have. Because we've been able to consolidate so many feeds from multiple perspectives and expand the narrative into an actual storyline, such as Freya and her party's journey with Graves, we've managed to maintain steady pacing episode to episode and have retained a high viewership throughout the entire series. Given that we now have a time slot on Game TV, I'm tentatively expecting that your earnings should at least double over the course of the next 2 or 3 months with just what you've released so far,
Paul said optimistically. Then he held up a hand in warning.
But making any more than that largely depends on what sort of content you have coming down the pipe for us. Entertainment isn't what it used to be. Like back in the 2010 era, where you could afford to be off the air for 6 months of the year, viewers are demanding new shows and content on an almost daily basis. And if you can't keep up...
You get left behind, Peter finished with an understanding nod, then looked over to me. We've been fairly busy the last few weeks, but nothing on the same level of excitement when compared to that run-in with Graves. Yeah, it's been mostly quiet since people stopped arriving from Iberia. We've managed to get the core group of Virtus up to level 13 and have spent most of our time building and developing Aldford, I said slowly, watching Paul nod as he followed along with me. Well, at least until this morning.
Oh, huh?
Paul made an excited noise, pulling a pen out of a shirt pocket.
What happened this morning, huh?
Well, we found out that the reason why we haven't had anyone new come into Aldford was that we had a group of bandits camped out intercepting all the traffic, Peter answered before going on to give a high-level summary of everything that had happened earlier in the day. I know it'll be quite some time before that part of the feed becomes available.
No, this is great,
Paul replied eagerly as he made a handful of notes.
This is exactly what we need. A huge battle with the bandits to kick things off. More people coming to the area. Well, we can definitely make this work.
Paul paused for a moment while looking down at his notes.
You said there were quite a few new adventurers that arrived too, right? Any chance of them maybe applying to Virtus and us getting their feed?
That was still being sorted out when we left. I looked towards Peter, who simply shrugged at me. We'll probably get applicants over the next few days. If any make the cut, we'll definitely send over their feeds. It's part of our guild membership requirements, anyway.
Perfect!
Paul exclaimed.
We'll sort through those feeds once we get them, and maybe do a feature on some of the new members, since some of those feeds may already be available for use, or will be sooner than today's bandit battle.
We have a couple other places that we're looking into exploring near Aldford when things settle down, I told the producer. Though the majority of our focus for the next couple days is going to be getting all the new people settled.
That's more than understandable, and I have no place to tell you how to run your town. Definitely do what you think is best,
Paul replied as he put his pen down and looked intently at Peter and me.
I know I asked this before. But are you sure I can't convince you all to go public with your names and avatars? It would really help with creating a tangible presence for viewers to identify with. Especially if we can line up a few interviews or appearances at events.
Right now, we'd rather keep our real-world identities private, I said after seeing Peter look towards me again for an answer to the producer's question. Maybe one day, when we can generate the biggest impact with it, we can go public, but right now... We'd rather not.
Well, that's definitely understandable.
Paul looked a little disappointed at my reply, but clearly understood our reasoning behind it.
I won't lie. It might slow things down with how quickly you climb the rankings and your viewership. But then again, if you can make it high enough up the ratings without anyone knowing who you are, then that mystery will only make your group even more interesting.
Hang on. Peter cocked his head in confusion. Their rankings?
Huh?
Paul gave us a blank look before slapping himself on the forehead.
Jeez! I'm sorry about that. I completely forgot that you two have literally spent the last few weeks in another world and wouldn't have had a chance to see them yet. Rankings, or more specifically, player rankings, is something that CTI introduced shortly after the first feeds were released.
Paul excitedly began to explain.
The ranking doesn't actually have anything to do with your in-game characters, but instead is a reflection of your real-world popularity for that current month. The more popular you are, the higher your ranking increases the following month. It also aggregates ranking in cases where multiple players submit their feeds into a single feed, giving them all the same ranking based on the overall popularity.
So, how are we doing right now, then? I asked hesitantly, looking back down at the sheet to see if it was on there.
Right now, Virtus is currently ranked 899th out of, well, several million players for the month of February,
Paul answered with a smile.
So I'd say you are doing very well overall.
We're in the top 1,000?
Peter exclaimed, slapping a hand on the table, then shifting to high-five me.
Damn! That's awesome!
No kidding, I replied, feeling a little overwhelmed at how high we'd climbed already.
That's insane.
Has there been any feedback from the viewers? Peter asked curiously. I'd be interested to know what they're saying about us.
It's largely positive, actually, especially from the greater gaming community, the producer replied. To be honest, all feedback has been overwhelmingly positive. Practically everyone wants to see more of you all. We've only had a handful of negative complaints, and that's just been due to bad language. And we've pretty much ignored those.
People still get worked up over salty language? Peter asked with surprise. That's pretty fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, I shook my head slowly in disbelief. They're okay with watching us fight and kill things, but their ears are suddenly too sensitive?
You'll hear all sorts of it in this business, Paul replied with a shrug. What's important to focus on, though, is that you guys are trending upwards. This new bandit stuff that happened today should keep you guys in the top 1,000 for the month of March. But if you're looking to climb, we're gonna need more exciting things to sell to the viewers until you can build a dedicated following.
We'll do our best, I told Paul, trying to project some optimism into my voice.
No doubt,
Paul said enthusiastically before indicating Andrew, who had been patiently listening to the conversation all this time.
Now, the last bit of our update is a few legal components, so I'm gonna turn this over to Andrew, because he can explain it much better than I can. Then he has a few options to explain to you all.
Still riding high on our excitement, Peter and I shifted our glance towards Andrew, who smiled and leaned forward.
So, to follow up on Paul's excellent segue, have you two ever considered the benefits of turning Virtus into a company?
Chapter 5.
Peter.
My voice was completely flat as I leaned my head against the side of the elevator wall.
Yeah, Mark.
I heard his defeated voice reply to me. My head hurts.
Mine too, Mark.
What happened back there? I asked, still struggling to understand what had happened in the second half of the meeting.
We laid the groundwork to form our guild as a corporate entity to make sure all of our guild members get a fair cut of our earnings while employing a more efficient tax structure, Peter explained tonelessly. It will also allow us to have our members expense their subscription costs of playing Ascend Online to the company, which we can then claim for tax credit. In addition, we can also hire employees to help manage real-world or even game-world duties while working directly for us.
I blinked twice before turning to look at my friend.
Why didn't he just explain it that way? That makes perfect sense.
He did explain it that way. Just with a bunch of more words in between it all,
Peter replied with a sigh. I just happen to have much more experience dealing with lawyers at work.
I might sound like a terrible friend for asking this, but you dealt with lawyers at work? I thought you traded digital currency.
Yeah, I did,
Peter confirmed with a dismissive wave of his hand.
Usually the lawyers came to me representing clients that need money moved in some way, or we're looking at exchanging their cryptocurrencies for real currency, or vice versa. It was all stupidly boring shit, and you know just how much I hated talking about my job. Or doing it.
Wait, hated?
I finally caught on to Peter's choice of words.
You quit?
Yeah.
Peter barked a tired laugh.
Same day that I called you about Ascend Online, actually. I just had enough and walked out.
That's crazy. What were you going to do if the game didn't pan out?
I shook my head, not believing that Peter hadn't told any of us that he had quit his job for well over a month.
Well, if I know, Peter shrugged. Go back to school for something design or art related?
That's pretty much the only field there's any real demand for. That's a far leap from the economics degree you have now, I replied slowly, still getting over my surprise.
What else is there to do, Mark? Between you and the others, you're all in design one way or the other, Peter exclaimed, waving his hands in the air. Food and retail stores are all run by robots. Vehicles are almost all automated now, and thanks to the nano-industrial revolution, we don't even need skilled workers for our manufacturing industry anymore, let alone unskilled ones. If it wasn't for the basic living income giving people money to spend, the world economy would have collapsed ages ago.
I don't disagree with you there, I replied with a sigh, having heard a similar version of Peter's rant before. The basic living income was a measure enacted by almost all of the world governments in response to nanotechnology and robotics rendering the majority of the global workforce obsolete over the last decade. Almost all labor or service-based industries have been fully automated, only needing a handful of individuals to manage and direct their robotic workforce, leaving billions out of work as their professions simply ceased to exist. Mines were now run by fully automated robots, vehicles drove themselves, and once sprawling farms had been converted with massive, completely automated multi-story complexes. To keep society from falling into chaos when bank accounts dried up and the threat of hunger drove people to riot, the government was forced to essentially give people free money, with the goal of providing a basic level of income to keep them from destabilizing the world economy. The money ensured that goods were still purchased, services were still used, houses were built, and the fabric of society kept itself together. Once the threat of global destabilization was averted, the government turned their efforts to re-educating their obsolete workforce by subsidizing almost all levels of education and encouraging their citizens to study science, engineering, or entertainment. However, that ran into its own problems, with only a fraction of the displaced workforce choosing to re-educate themselves, leading to a growing class of people who simply did nothing but stayed at home and consumed entertainment, content to live a life of minimalism within the means provided to them by the basic living income. Only those who wanted larger homes, luxuries, nanite treatments, and meaning beyond simple consumption worked to re-educate themselves. But if that wasn't enough, the millennials who already have all the engineering and science jobs aren't retiring, I thought while rubbing my face, feeling the familiar frustration my generation had grown up with surge through me, leaving us clutching at straws with nothing productive to channel our energy into. I guess that's why Ascend Online worked out to be so popular, I said with a weary shrug.
It's given everyone a better escape than sitting at home and consuming all the crap they put on the TV, Peter agreed, pushing himself off the wall as the elevator door slid open to our floor.
Hang on. Aren't we on TV now? I asked, following Peter out of the elevator.
Damn, I'd already forgotten about that,
Peter whispered softly before barking a short laugh.
We should watch ourselves. That'll be hilarious.
I wonder if everyone's logged out yet, I asked with a chuckle as we walked down the hall towards our suite, my stomach rumbling loudly as the smell of food filled the air.
That smells great. I can't even remember the last time I ate. That makes two of us.
Peter snorted, waving his metal bracelet in front of our door's sensor, then pushed it open.
Hey, they're back!
Zach's voice greeted us the second that we stepped into the suite, followed by a powerful aroma of food.
About time. We thought you guys forgot about us.
Well, if we'd known there was food waiting for us, we'd have come back sooner,
I replied, my eyes growing wide as I saw the massive amount of food that had been ordered.
Did you guys get...
Pizza, chicken wings, and Chinese food?
Misha cut in, holding a massive plate of food in both of her hands as she carefully walked from the kitchenette to the table everyone was seated at, trying not to spill anything from her pile.
Yes, yes we did.
Mish, that plate's bigger than you are!
Peter trailed off as the petite woman gave him a dangerous look.
Choose your next words carefully, Peter.
Peter coughed.
Bon appetit.
Misha's expression smoothed into a smile as she sat down at the table.
Good boy. There's hope for you yet.
Quickly, shedding my winter jacket and hanging it in the closet, I fixed myself a plate and found a place at the table, Peter following close behind me.
So? How'd it go?
Deckard asked us eagerly, causing everyone to turn their attention towards Peter and me.
Are we rich yet?
Well...
Peter began, drawing the word out for an unnecessarily long time, eventually prompting Heron to swat him on the arm.
Quit it, you troll!
Heron grunted while waving a half-eaten pizza slice in my direction.
Let Mark tell it if you're just gonna screw with us.
But he has no sense of showmanship,
Peter complained, mockingly rubbing his arm in pain.
A business report doesn't need showmanship, Zack added dryly.
Of course it does! Everything does!
We're doing really great, I said, shaking my head at Peter's antics as I began to explain the results of our meeting. Everyone stared at me intently as I outlined our success and the steps Peter and I had taken to make Virtus an actual business entity in the real world.
But that's not all either,
I teased as I wrapped up the day's events.
We're also going to be on Game TV tonight at 9. They're airing our entire series for everyone to watch.
That's amazing,
Misha shouted as the rest of the group broke out in cheers.
This is better than we could have hoped for.
We have to watch it,
Deckard said, clearly sharing the same sentiment that Peter had expressed in the hallway earlier.
We'll also have to update Frey and the rest of the guild members, Misha told me, before cocking her head in thought. And I'll have to get some of their real names, too. Oh, I've been so dialed in lately, I can't believe I never bothered to ask.
It's easy to forget about reality when we're in Ascend Online, I told Misha. Makes me wonder if they designed it that way on purpose.
Maybe. Misha replied with a shrug. Could just be how her brain tries to make sense of it all.
Could be, I agreed, before a slight frown crossed my face.
Wish they did a better job of helping us reconcile appearances, though.
My brain has been struggling pretty badly at getting used to how you all look again.
I keep expecting to see you all either as your in-game avatars or your pre-VR diet appearances.
I'm glad to hear I'm not the only one struggling with that. Misha said slowly, running a hand through her short blonde hair. I found that slowing down and really looking at the person helps. It's the quick glances out of the corner of my eye that always causes me to scare myself thinking that there's a stranger beside me.
Nodding slowly, I decided to give Misha's advice a shot and took a closer look at the friend I'd known for nearly 25 years. At first, I didn't feel anything different, my mind still feeling as if there was something subtly wrong with the person sitting before me. But the longer I looked, I started to see the familiar features that comprised my mental image of Misha. Short blonde hair framed a face of obvious Slavic descent, a pair of green eyes accenting the already sharp features that had been magnified by the effects of the VR diet. A familiar scar just under Misha's eye caught my attention, one that brought back memories of a playground mishap from ages past. Something clicked in my brain as I refamiliarized myself with her appearance, leaving me nodding and feeling a little better about my mental state.
Yeah, I can see that helping, I said slowly.
So how did the rest of the day work out after we left?
Pretty good overall, I guess,
Misha replied with a noncommittal shrug.
We got the tent up without any real issues and managed to get the adventures settled. Quite a few of them expressed interest in joining Virtus after our rather daring rescue this morning.
That's great. I said with a sigh of relief, mostly happy to hear that the town was still safe, but also excited to hear that we might have new applicants soon. We'll have to hold tryouts once we're back online and see if any of them make the cut.
I think a handful of them will,
Misha said optimistically. They're almost all lower leveled, but a few might have that edge we're looking for. When we created Virtus, we decided that we were going to try and be as selective as possible in our recruitment criteria. We wanted to retain and recruit members that we could truly rely on, and that they would be able to carry their own weight from both a combat and out-of-combat perspective. We couldn't afford to have members that flinched in combat and were afraid of getting hurt, or those who sat around and did nothing in their spare time. Our goal was to build a group of self-motivated individuals that would stand up for one another no matter what the game world threw at us.
We also got Marlin settled in.
Zack cut into the conversation with a wave of his dark-skinned hand, having been half-listening to our conversation.
Yeah? How's he making out?
I shifted my glance to look at Zack, going through the same process I'd just gone through with Misha to refamiliarize myself with his appearance.
Great,
Zack replied with a confident nod, causing his wavy jet-black hair to bob in the air as he looked at me with the dark brown eyes.
We managed to get his cart stored in the crafting hall, well out of the way, where anyone would easily trip over it. We piled a bunch of our stuff that we had in storage on top of his cart, too, so it's really unlikely that anyone's going to go digging through it all.
As Zack spoke, I couldn't help but notice that the wiry Italian man had lost a rather substantial amount of weight, likely as much, if not more, than Peter had. It left his face overly lean-looking, the scraggly beard he had growing doing little to fill it out. Thanks for sorting all that out, Zack.
Hey, no problem at all,
he said excitedly, flashing a tooth-filled smile.
I'm excited to see what things we can come up with alchemy-wise, now that we have better tools to work with.
Me too, I agreed, looking forward to a chance when I could craft relatively uninterrupted. The rest of the evening flew by as we slowly unwound from the day's events and collectively consumed a truly overwhelming amount of food. Our bodies were desperately craving solid, non-intravenous nourishment. For me, it was the first meal I could remember eating in over a week, an experience I didn't realize that I missed having. With my in-game avatar not needing food to survive, I almost never bothered to eat, always working on the next item on my never-ending to-do list, or finding something that needed checking on. I was actually lost in thought, mentally reviewing that very to-do list, while cleaning up after our epic feast, when Deckard's massive hand came down on my shoulder and pulled me back into the moment.
"Got a minute, Mark?"
he asked, thumbing his other hand at Heron, who was standing just behind him.
"We have something to fill you in on."
"Yeah, sure." I tossed the towel I was holding down on the counter and turned around, craning my head upwards at Deckard's giant frame. "Well, at least there's a little bit of familiarity here," I thought, watching Deckard awkwardly shift himself to the side to allow Heron enough room to step into the tiny kitchenette. Built like a brick house, the VR diet had probably had the least amount of impact on Deckard when compared to the rest of the group, only serving to further accent his already muscular form. Finding a comfortable position leaning against the counter, Deckard ran a hand over his cleanly shaved head and fixed Heron with his steel-blue eyes.
"All right, Heron. Tell him the same thing you told me."
Thankfully, I was able to keep my head relatively level as I shifted my glance from Deckard over to Heron, the two of them being reasonably similar in height, if not body size. Where Deckard had a muscular and fit appearance, Heron was rail-thin, appearing as if a stiff wind would be able to sweep him off his feet. Even more so now that the VR diet had trimmed the little fat that had managed to somehow cling to Heron's overly lean body.
"Okay."
Heron started slowly, uncharacteristically fiddling with a pop can in his hand.
"So, I've noticed something with the new adventurers."
"Oh?" I asked, curiosity blooming across my face. With how quickly Peter and I left after sorting out accommodations with Leandra, I'd barely had a chance to look at, let alone talk with any of the new adventurers that we'd rescued from the bandits.
"Well, first of all, I think the majority of them are really new to the game," Heron replied. "And I mean that they're still within the first or second cycle of play, so they haven't learned to be careful about what they let slip."
"Well, they must be part of the second wave of players, after they added more pods," I commented with a nod.
"Yeah, I think so too. Anyway, though, after talking with a bunch of them, I got the impression that bandit issues like we face today are pretty commonplace as soon as you leave Coldscar, if not as large a group."
Heron continued, a nervous look creeping over his face.
"Soon as you're outside the city limits, you're pretty much on your own. And if you're not traveling in a large group, chances are you're going to be going for a respawn before the day's out."
"Damn, it's gotten that bad?" I could hear the disbelief in my voice.
"Oh, you think that's bad? Oh, I'm just getting started."
Heron grunted pessimistically as he shook his head, causing his dark, shoulder-length hair to swish side to side.
"Pretty much every resource, be it a mine, forest, quarry, or something that can be collected and used in crafting, is either claimed by a guild or is being actively fought over by guilds."
"Oh, damn," I echoed a second time, inwardly wincing at Heron's news. "So it's basically a free-for-all out there."
"Yep." Heron agreed. "But here's the icing on the cake.
No one seems to care.
What do you mean? I cocked my head, not quite understanding what Heron was referring to.
No one seems to care that the adventurers are fighting. It's a complete shit show everywhere, with guilds scrambling for whatever power they can get. From what I've been told, the Iberian military is letting the adventurers do pretty much anything they want, so long as it doesn't interfere with the development of Coldscar.
Which tells me that the military is busy dealing with something else that needs their full attention, which is likely the Holy Ascendancy of Elagos,
Deckard added.
Otherwise, they would be putting a stop to all the infighting between the guilds.
I'm surprised it hasn't broken out into a larger conflict, to be honest,
Heron said, looking at the two of us with a grim expression.
You know that's how it'll end up. Maybe not soon, but eventually someone's gonna propose an alliance, and they're gonna get enough people on board. After that,
things will snowball, then escalate, I replied, completely agreeing with Heron. Though what I want to know is, why did these adventures come out this way then? Seems like they would have enough opportunities filling the power vacuums that are forming and joining up with one of the guilds. Why go out to the frontier?
Do you think they know something we don't?
Deckard queried, crossing his arms over his chest while looking at me.
We really haven't had enough time to filter through all the settlers that arrived today. Maybe it's a simple case of just wanting to get away from the player versus player combat.
Maybe, I said with a shrug. Thinking about it, though, Aldford isn't really in a strategically viable place, at least not in the short term. We're what, a 4 or 5 day march to Coldscar? That's well off the beaten path.
That's true, too.
Deckard rubbed the side of his face thoughtfully.
There's hardly enough of us out this way for anyone to worry about. I mean, even if all of the new settlers and adventurers join Aldford, that'll only put us at about 300 strong. Compared to the thousands of adventurers that must have spawned in Iberia, in addition to NPCs, and even distant adventurers that spawned within the Ascendancy.
We're small fry. I breathed a small sigh of relief at the thought. I wasn't naive enough to believe that we would completely be left alone if a major conflict broke out between the adventurer guilds, or even Iberia and the Ascendancy, but we would definitely be a low priority.
Maybe.
Heron agreed, despite the worried look on his face.
But I'm concerned that one of the bigger guilds near Coldscar might decide to give up or get driven out towards us. They may not be inclined to play nice.
Nothing we can really do about that,
Deckard grunted.
We have no easy way of keeping watch on Coldscar from 5 days away.
The best thing we can do is to keep working on Aldford. I motioned for the guys to make their way out into the rest of the common room. But while we're talking about this, we might as well take advantage of our time off to throw some plans around.
For what, exactly?
Heron asked, turning back to look at me as we walked out of the room. Survival. Chapter 6. Sunday, March 10th, 2047, 6:57 a.m. Aldford, the Foundry. As I logged back into Ascend Online, I felt my incorporeal body floating through nothingness, my vision swirling with a kaleidoscope of colors with a single line of text floating directly in front of me. Loading. Please wait. Gradually, I felt my virtual self take shape as memories began flooding into my consciousness. In the span of seconds, I lived through another day, suddenly experiencing everything that my avatar had done while I had been offline. Images of weaving filtered through my mind as I remembered myself helping sew and adjust the rough squares of burlap that we had stored away in the crafting hall. The memories then shifted forward to when I helped set up the massive tent, working on whatever task that Leandra needed help completing. Then suddenly again I found myself back in the crafting hall, carefully refining countless leather hides and bronze ingots. My vision finally cleared as I completed the login process and found myself standing alone in the sweltering heat of the foundry, dressed in a simple linen shirt and leather pants, having interrupted my avatar in the middle of refining bronze ingots. A quick glance around me showed that my armor was hanging from a rack nearby. Wiping a bead of sweat off my forehead, I noticed a system message appear in the corner of my vision.
Welcome back to Ascend Online. While you are offline, one or more of your skills have increased. Please check your character sheet for more details. Oh, sweet! I gained a level in something! I mentally cheered as I dismissed the prompt and opened my character sheet for what seemed to be the first time in ages, the information filling my vision. I can't even remember the last time I took a solid look at my stats. Probably not since I hit level 13 last week. Lyrian Rastler, level 13 Spellsword, human male, Iberian. Statistics, HP, 726 out of 726, stamina 660 out of 660, mana 640 out of 640. Experience to the next level, 19,287 out of 27,000. Attributes. Strength, 53 out of 55. Agility, 43 out of 49. Constitution, 40. Intelligence, 48. Willpower, 18. Abilities. Sneak Attack, 2. Passive. Attacks made before the target is aware of you automatically deal weapon damage plus 35. Power Attack, 2. Active, 50 stamina. You slash viciously at the target, putting extra strength behind the blow. Deal weapon damage plus 25. Kick, active 20. You kick your enemy for 10 to 20 points of damage and knock them back 1 to 2 yards. Depending on your strength agility score, you may also knock down the target. Shoulder tackle, active, 40 stamina. Stun enemy for 1 to 2 seconds with chance to knock enemy down based on strength and or agility attribute. Unarmed mastery 1, passive. All unarmed attack damage is increased by 12. Skills. Magic. Evocation. Level 13, 56%. Alteration, level 13, 88%. Conjuration, level 13, 71%. Abjuration, level 13, 42%. Weapons. Unarmed combat, level 13, 21%. Swords, level 13, 75%. Axes, level 11, 35%. Daggers, level 12, 73%. Other, stealth, level 11, 12%. Wordplay, level 11, 81%. Perception, level 13, 75%. Trade skills. Blacksmithing, level 13, 12%. Carpentry, level 13, 51%. Cartography, level 2, 3%. Tailoring, level 12, 9%. One level gained while offline. Cooking, level 5, 54%. Herbalism, level 11, 4%. Leatherworking, level 13, 77%. Mining, level 11, 1%. Leadership skills. Increased health regeneration. Increase amount of health regenerated by 6, 6 out of 10. Increased mana regeneration. Increase amount of mana regenerated by 5, 5 out of 10. Increased stamina regeneration. Increase amount of stamina regenerated by 6, 6 out of 10. Increased movement. Increased mounted and unmounted speed by 7%, 7 out of 10. Spells. Flare. Light. Blink Step. Shocking Touch. Lesser Shielding. Flame Dagger. Jump. Racial Ability. Military Conditioning, passive. All defenses are increased by 5% and total hit points are increased by 10%. Traits. Open-minded. Accepting of racial differences and radical ideas, you've learned to accept wisdom and the opportunity to learn no matter what form it takes, allowing you to make intuitive insights where others would give up in frustration. Grants a substantial increase in learning new skills and the ability to learn all race-locked traits, skills, crafting recipes, and abilities that are not otherwise restricted. Reforge. You've learned the basics of how to recreate a broken relic and are able to bring back some of its former glory. This skill will function across any and all trade skills you acquire. Improvisation. Your study of goblin craftsmanship has given you the insight to make adjustments to standard and learned recipes by replacing required materials with something else. For example, replacing metal with wood in an armor recipe will create a set of wooden armor instead of metal. The higher your level in a trade skill, the more changes can be made, and the fewer materials they will require. Ether warped. Due to high exposure to raw ether, your body has undergone unpredictable changes. You have gained the following subtraits and abilities as part of your condition. True sight. Your eyes have been enhanced by exposure to ether to the point where they are able to pierce through natural darkness and all facets of magic to see things as they truly are. This ability replaces arcane sight and can be suppressed at will. When this ability is active, the player's eyes will visibly glow a bright blue. Mana Void. Your body's hunger for arcane energy has become ravenous, turning your appearance gaunt as it desperately craves more and more mana in order to fuel your metabolism. For as long as you have mana, you do not require to eat or drink. However, if your mana reaches zero, your body will immediately begin to consume itself at a rate of one hit point for each second in mana deprivation state, per second, until mana is restored. All mana regeneration is permanently reduced by 100%. Mana Leech. As a result of prolonged contact with an annulment sphere, your body's hunger for mana is so powerful you are now able to leech mana from any object or creature that you come in physical contact with, regardless of intervening armor or clothing that is not specifically designed to block the flow of mana. When this ability is activated, mana will be leeched at a rate of 35 mana per second. Any mana leeched will be added to your current mana pool, and any excess mana will be lost. This ability scales with class level and intelligence. Familiar. Name, Amaranth. Type, Aether Warped Puma. Level, 13. Relationship, fanatically loyal. Familiar abilities. Mental link. The magical bond linking you and your familiar has created an intimate mental link between the two of you, allowing each of you to communicate mentally between one another for a distance of up to 1 mile, regardless of intervening objects. Magical wards, however, will block this form of mental communication. Soulbound. During the familiar bonding process, you have anchored the being's soul directly to your own. Should the familiar be slain in your service, you will immediately suffer a 10% penalty to all attributes and skills for the next 24 hours, until the familiar is reborn. Should the familiar survive your death, it does not suffer any penalties, but will be compelled to travel to your place of rebirth as quickly as possible. Looking over my sheet carefully, I spotted the level I gained in tailoring while I was offline. My newly gained memories matching the skill increase with preparing the burlap canvas needed for the temporary tent. I also noted small skill increases in both leatherworking and blacksmithing, a result of Leandra needing my avatar's skills to help create rigging and fastenings to attach the canvas to the support timbers that held the entire tent aloft. Before closing my character sheet, I couldn't help but glance over some of the other skills that I'd learned and worked on over the last month, seeing just how much they'd grown since my first play cycle, and how happy I felt to no longer be undertrained. I was confident with several weapons now, having taken the time to train with both axes and daggers, in addition to maintaining my sword and unarmed skills. The extra effort spent learning the new weapon styles paid off almost immediately, as I managed to learn the second rank of both power attack and sneak attack while training the two skills, without having to spend any precious class skill points to unlock those abilities. I'm so happy I lucked out on learning unarmed mastery too, I thought, seeing the ability appear on my character sheet. I'd learned the skill during a particularly desperate fight last week in the wolverine-infested plains to the south of Oldford, while the party and I were grinding our way towards level 13. We had spent most of the day clearing the vicious creatures from the plain when we accidentally walked past a burrow containing a level 15 rare-ranked wolverine. I still remembered its wicked howl as the massive beast suddenly launched itself out of the burrow, killing Constantine outright and slicing one of Sierra's arms clean off her body before Drace managed to get its attention. Everything after that was a blur of blood, terror, and fur. At least until I found myself being held in the air, impaled on a set of razor-sharp claws and desperately pummeling the creature's face as I tried to keep myself from ending up in its mouth. Good times, I smiled to myself, remembering that the wolverine's silver fur was drying on a tanning rack, waiting for me to gain a few more levels in leatherworking and a supply of potent alcohol before I tried cutting and tanning the hide, then hopefully crafting it into something useful. Dismissing the sheet from my vision with a wave of a withered hand, I walked over to my armor, my eyes checking over the equipment that hung from the rack.
I gently ran a hand over the blackened iron chain shirt, inspecting it for any broken links or damage from the battle with the bandits. Finding nothing, I called up the item stats, which appeared in my vision. Blackened iron chain shirt. Slot, chest. Item class, relic. Item quality, good, plus 15%. Armor, 100. Armor type, light. Strength, plus 3. Agility, plus 3. Durability, 160 out of 160. Underlayer, quilted gambeson. Weight, 3.5 kilograms. Favored class, martial. Level, 13. As much as I loved my old webwood armor, this definitely provides better protection, I thought as I lifted the shirt off the rack, revealing a quilted gambeson that the armor was sitting on. While reforging the chainmail shirt, I discovered that Ascend Online had chosen to emulate a much more